When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Versus your more intellectual, highbrow, pretentious films.
Don't say that like you don't love that.
Yeah, I do. I do
love it. You did air quotes like, you know, the person out there that... It's him. It's me.
It's me.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
And I'm the entertainer.
I'm the critic. Yeah, that has to come with a little bit of a sigh. No, I don't know. Recently, I feel like I've been enjoying things more than you.
And I think I've been critiquing things more than you.
Yeah. So a little bit of a role reversal sometimes.
It makes it more fun when we get into the other person's mind a little bit. And this whole channel, we're trying to toe the line between we want to be entertaining, we like enjoying ourselves, we like having
fun. That's nice.
Fun's always great, but also we like to analyze things. We like to get granular. And this whole conversation just about entertainment versus art and industry, books, films, everything's... Sometimes it can't fit into those camps. Sometimes it's both, sometimes it's muddied, but a lot of the times you can just think, oh, that thing's just going for pure entertainment or that's going for art. Then how does it affect how we review things, how people think of things? Mm-hmm. Your Marvel versus your intense drama.
Triangle of Sadness.
A Godfather.
Yeah,
it's probably more well-known than Triangle of Sadness.
That's probably right.
This conversation about entertainment versus art, what is your gut reaction when you hear entertainment and what is it when you hear art?
I mean, my gut reaction is action slop is entertainment. And then your art is something like what the Oscars tries to show. Like often, like the Oscars are very rarely ever going to have as best picture or even nominate the highest grossing film.
Sometimes they'll actually nominate it now just to put it in there. Top Gun Maverick made it, Avatar made it, but they won't win.
Yeah, they'll never win.
Yeah,
which it just kind of shows that in the industry, people want entertainment. People don't necessarily want art, at least on a larger scale. People would rather go to the movies to be entertained rather than, you know, sit and think about their a moral quandary and whether or not, you know, that hierarchy is actually a complex web of different roles that we all play depending on our station and time and life. It's like, I just want to see the big ship go boom. Make me think those things.
That's actually a great definition of entertainment. Would you agree with this definition? That entertainment is more temporary enjoyment. Enjoy the thing you're watching it, you're there. Mm-hmm. And art's going for long-lasting. You think about it, it doesn't leave you. How often are you thinking of your Marvel film versus you're thinking of the films we just mentioned, like Godfather or Triangle? There's something that's going for a message. Is that a distinguishing factor?
Somewhat. Okay. But there are exceptions. Sometimes I still think about
Mad Max,
Top Gun Maverick sometimes. I'm like, that was sick. And then we're all like, I kind of want to watch that scene again where, you know, Tom Cruise is doing the run in less time than the other students. And like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. It does sometimes stick with you. But
maybe this is a better definition. Hmm. Because I want to define this. I want to see what value critics have versus... Because you know when you go on Rotten Tomatoes, you see the critic score, you see the audience score.
Yeah.
A lot of people just go, screw the critic score. Screw the Rambler score. Look at what's the general consensus of this film. And so maybe one distinguishing factor, instead of temporary versus long lasting, it's is a word distracting versus reflecting. When
that's a good, that's a really good way to put it, Austin. I really like that. That's a really well put together thought.
This is really scaring me. This is I don't know whether you're being pretentiously.
No, it's the best way to put it.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't do it better.
Oh, now you're lying. Now I know your critical self is not coming out right now. This is weird. Yeah. Okay, but
you don't. It says something that when I try and give you a compliment, it does. You feel
uncomfortable.
Your walls go up. You're just the hair on the back of your neck just goes up when I give you a compliment. There's a threat coming.
You are very much like the Gordon Ramsay, the Simon Cowell, the Ratatouille. You know the critic in Ratatouille.
Yeah, sure.
Here's the positive. I mean, I'm going to dish a compliment back at you.
Okay.
When you give a compliment, it's so out of place and unordinary that I don't know if you're joking. That's the first thing. So first I have to dissect, okay, is this a joke? Is he serious? And then if I find out you're serious, it's, wow, it means so much versus I compliment somebody out there like yeah. Austin compliments Rich. If he's going to compliment Rich, he's going to compliment
he's going to compliment everyone.
Come on, look at him. So
yeah.
You mean that? You like that definition of
that's
reflecting versus distracting.
Yeah, exactly. An entertainment thing is distracting you from your day and taking you out of your... Like, the best entertainment does is it makes you forget about the troubles of the world for a little while.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, that's a great thing.
No negative connotation on distracting.
No negative connotation. Yeah. It's just depending on what mood you're in. Yeah. Do I want to be distracted or do I want to be reflective? Sometimes I'm in that reflective mood. But
are your favorite things out there typically both very entertaining and also very reflective? Does it sometimes...
Almost, nearly always, it's a little bit... It's a lot of both.
Yeah.
My favorite things, are my top five favorite movies would be 12 Angry Men. I think that's... One, incredibly entertaining. Like, I'm sucked in. I am on the edge of my seat. I'm enjoying the hell out of that movie. It's very entertaining. It's very distracting from the world.
Tense.
It's tense. I love all that.
Yeah.
But also really reflective. I'm constantly thinking about, one, this is it's a great movie on how arguments are to be made. How do you change someone's mind? Is that even possible? Is just the act of trying to change someone's mind the wrong attitude? Because often, I think that movie kind of shows that to change someone else's mind, you have to prove to them that your mind is able to be changed. Because if you don't demonstrate that, they won't change their mind ever.
Yeah.
And so argument about...
The art of debate.
The art of debate. And just the nature of our justice system and what is our main purpose. How does bias interact with our daily lives? And how do you overcome bias?
So good. And you also were deeply entertained.
I was deeply entertained and incredibly reflective.
Yeah, yeah.
It's best of both.
What do you think for the entertainment side and for the art side, the most positive thing about each and negative? And I'll give you a couple words to explain what I'm thinking. Where the entertainment can be seen as, oh, you can actually have fun. So Marvel movies, fun. You can look at movies like that are made for broad audience. That's actually fun. Top Gun, Maverick, fun. But on the flip side for that entertainment is, oh, it's just slop and kind of brainless, people could say. Like on the negative side, when the art people can critique entertainment saying it's that's what they'd say if they're really pretentious. Now the entertainment people to the art side can say, oh, on the best side, oh, it's very thought-provoking and intellectual, but on the negative side can say it's pretentious and
boring.
Holier than thou and dry. Yeah.
So I think this is just a case of extremes. If you're going for extreme entertainment, like no thought involved, you're not trying to say a message, you're not trying to do any of that, you're just trying to entertain.
Yeah.
If you slip up at all, it has to be really entertaining. If not, then it's going to be schlop. It's just going to feel like schlop because there's no message behind it. Eh. It feels cheap.
Your typical Dwayne Johnson movie, The Rock.
Yes, basically every
He just Dwayne. Plays himself and then goes... Yeah.
It better be damn entertaining or else it's schlop versus your more intellectual, highbrow, pretentious films.
Don't say that like you don't love that.
Yeah, I do. I do love it.
You did air quotes like, you know, the person out there that... It's him. It's me.
It's me.
I like to think we both really like our entertainment thing stuff and art stuff. We just like the good stuff that's entertaining, the good stuff that's art.
Yeah.
We have a special sponsorship today by Displate. You know them, the magnetic mounting system of any cool metallic poster you want. But today, as a special announcement, they are releasing textured Displates.
From now on, Displate will be offering premium finishes on a vast variety of their designs.
These new Displates have tactile textures, 3D contours, and I don't know if you can see this, but a matte and gloss effect. They are sick.
They're pretty sweet.
And look, here's another one, a James Webb type thing where they have text design on it. If you're a space nerd, a sci-fi, a fantasy nerd, they have all of these kind of designs, just like your normal Displate. Mount and swap right off your wall, super easy. But now they have textures and this awesome 3D matte gloss finish. It is just an upgrade in every regard.
Go to the link on screen and in the description below to check out the new textured designs, and you can get 22 to 33% off if you use our code 2TORAMBLE.
Thank you, Displate, for sponsoring this video. Back to the episode.
Well, think about books and movies where the main thought is the message and the main thought is the story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do it that great. Better than a Marvel movie. It's still very thoughtful. It has a bunch of things that you can reflect on and something interesting to say. So it's much better in that category than a Marvel movie. But if it has no entertainment factor, you're just going to, you're going to be highly critical. So if you're not doing both, you're only doing one, it better be amazing or you're going to fall flat on your face. And so it's that danger. That's kind of my thought.
If you try for both, maybe you land one.
Yeah. If you try for both and you don't do either amazing, it'll still feel like a very good movie and or a very good book. Either one.
Had a decent time, plus had a message there that was interesting. Yeah. Right.
I think that's a general reason why I like books more often. I think books almost just by their medium have to go for something, some type of message of some type, generally. And
way more than movies, because you have all this time to spend.
So even though the book may not be as super entertaining, but I get something thoughtful from it. Or if it's not very thoughtful, I get some entertainment. It normally is always going for a bit of both versus movies. I've been going to a lot of movies where it's either or. And there's a lot of just entertaining movies where there's no thought behind it. Am I kind of making sense on the extremes?
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, I see that. I think a good recent example on our channel is The Book That Wouldn't Burn, where you weren't deeply entertained, does it seem like, but it had something to say. It was interesting enough to where you'd give that a lot more credit than if that was turned into a movie and just was a library-style action flick.
Yeah.
You'd be less interested in it.
Yeah, basically trying to do both and doing both okay is ultimately a better product than doing one or the other good. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I get what you mean. Yeah.
Okay.
And so getting your Mad Max Fury Road, while you mentioned that earlier, it does entertaining is the best it can be.
Yeah.
It doesn't have much to say, but is it fun?
I understand someone out there going Mad Max does has a lot to say. It's like...
It's not the first thing you think of.
Not really. It in its world, the world building behind it, and just sure. But over that movie on its own, there's not a ton of thought behind it. It's not really showing much of a message, but it is entertaining as hell.
Yeah. And what do you think on that measure of someone watching a movie like that, or your general audience versus the critic? How do you view us here? Do you view us differently? What is the value of the audience, value of the critic?
Well, I think a critic generally has that level of thoughtfulness in their head. It is more, they're more susceptible or they're more sensitive to that type of stuff. That a general audience member maybe is just going for entertainment, even though it's not very thoughtful, they just don't see it or don't care. Versus I think almost all critics will at least want sometimes they're just a bit more harsh on the entertainment value. Like if it's just entertaining with no thoughts involved, they like it way less than if a general audience member likes it.
Is that because you think critics, when they're Okay, a film critic.
I think this is just the nature of consuming a lot of said type of media.
I was going to say, with a critic, film critic has seen a lot of films.
Exactly. Yeah. And at a certain point, when you've seen a bunch of films or if you read a bunch of books, you eventually just kind of get bored of seeing the same thing over and over again because you've seen way too many. And so you're looking for something to think about, something new, because if you don't, then it's just kind of, your eyes glaze over of like, yeah, okay, I've seen this plot line 15, 20 times before.
So the more we have this channel, the more you turn from audience to critic?
I think so, because an audience member will, like, they see a couple movies a year, and often they're rewatching
and
their favorite movies every year.
I read a couple of books a year.
Exactly. That's why you're generally more positive. Though, the past several months, I think I've been positive. Positive Paul.
Positive vibes, Richard. Yeah.
Yeah. Positive Paul, negative Nancy.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Sometimes I get in moods of I just like liking things. And I want to like it.
You swing with the times.
Sure. I'm just having a good time.
And then, so maybe it reflects, let's get artful for a second. Does it reflect how you're doing in your life?
Sometimes. I mean, when I was reading the final book of Tad Williams' Dragon Boat Chair is the first book. It's, what is the whole series called?
Is called
Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn.
Thank you. Yeah. Was this the hike you were on?
Yes. When I was hiking up Mauna Loa, that was the hardest thing I've done in my life where I was very concerned for my well-being and wondering if I was going to have to spend the night on volcanic rock in the dark alone on the mountain, like no rescue, there's no signal. I'd have to just figure it out in the cold on that lonely volcano. But all this time, I had that book's audiobook in my ears as I'm doing a death march up a mountain. Did that negatively affect my, feeling of the book? Maybe.
A little bit. Teensy bit.
It's a strong possibility that negatively affected my enjoyment of the book. So, I don't know. How do you feel about it?
For sure, mood definitely affects it to some degree. I've been trying to think about and look at from our perspective on this channel of how have us critically analyzing and getting deep into books changed from before having hours-long podcasts about talking about a book, because it's one thing to read it.
Yeah.
Tons of people have read more than us too, but another thing to read it and then talk about it in detail, write notes about it, and add some value and also talk interesting points, see if some people agree, disagree, put it out into the ether. Be a reviewer. There's a difference between just a reader then a reviewer and a critic and what word you would use for us. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking at reviewing books a lot more now and seeing how has my opinion changed on books, on consuming things, and also my opinion on critics as well. I'm kind of in this zone now where I really get the audience. I mean, totally get audiences are there to see, okay, is this worth my time?
Sure.
Is it worth my time? I'm doing this as a hobby. Just tell me. When you go to Rotten Tomatoes, give me the audience score. And the critic side of being jaded from reading a lot of the same stuff or seeing a lot of the same stuff. So I could see a critic really looking at Top Gun Maverick. And, bad example because I think critics loved it. But
yeah.
The
main thing is if there's a difference. I think there are two main reasons if there's a critic difference. A difference between the critic and audience score. One could just be the pure entertainment factor of, it's not a very entertaining movie, or it is a very entertaining movie, but it doesn't have a lot to say, and it's really kind of a sloppy film.
Yeah,
critics probably not going to be very positive about it. The other reason could be just there is some sense of fear, I think, from critics on being able to honestly say something about, say, a more sensitive topic. There are movies that just kind of seem like, who's going to really, actually going to rate that lower?
Or a more industry-centered film. So audiences can question the authenticity of critics because if you're in the industry, if If you're an actual critic and you know the filmmakers are in that, it's kind of like an author reviewing another author's book poorly. There's a reason authors don't go out of their way to say they didn't like a book. Usually, because why would you go out and drag down another fellow author's book publicly and try to harm them? So you can get a kind of, if you're in the industry, you can look at them and go, that's why maybe we have some authenticity, because we are not in.
We're banging on the door.
Yeah.
We want in.
We want to leave you schmucks, okay? we want to go with the high class one day, but they know we're still with them for now.
For now, we're with you.
So maybe there's that little ounce of it to go. Obviously, on our podcast here, we have we seem audience-esque. We're obviously here. We just enjoy books. We're readers reviewing stuff. But the difference between a reviewer and a critic, is there a line there? What's a reviewer? What's a critic? Do you see more negative connotation when you say critic?
Oh, generally, yeah. There's a sense of superiority complex, just kind of snobbish. Out of touch, often. The main thing is critics often discount the purely fun films. And ultimately what their job is there for is, hey, should I spend my dollars on buying this movie ticket or not? They're not there to, like, I guess they shouldn't be there for, like, did I personally love it? And did it scratch the intellectual itch that I had that day?
Dude, my name's Mitch, and me and my kid want to go watch, like, a sports film.
Yeah. It honestly should just be, like, it's quality control. Yeah. What is the thing going for? Is it worth your time?
Yeah.
And then say why it would be or why it isn't. And so when they... It's honestly our rating scale often when we're talking about thoughtfulness versus entertainment value for emotional impact.
That's why we split into those two categories.
Exactly.
We'll have a rating system explanation in detail video out. But yeah, we had the trouble of what do we rate when we're looking at emotion and how it affects us? Well, there's one side of it is the message and themes.
Yeah.
And trying to look at how much do you reflect on the book? Or how much is it the distracting emotional investment? Do you cry watching it? Do you laugh?
I noticed before that often I would read a book and yes, I was very entertained, but I didn't think it was really thoughtful or anything like that. So my score would be lower, and ultimately that's not fair. I want to be able to say, hey,
super entertaining,
you should read this book.
Right?
You should read this book. It's very fun. It's worth your time.
Yeah.
Because it's very entertaining. Not that it's very smart, thoughtful. So, yeah, I think critics can often forget that. There's also just, we've seen way too many instances of Rotten Tomatoes being, like, basically studios buying reviews and artificially lowering, like, any negative reviews and trying to corrupt that whole system. Like, Rotten Tomatoes actually has, at several times, been caught fudging the numbers. And so there's plenty of animosity and reason to distrust the critic score.
I see what you mean. And that audience score comes off almost more authentic because, okay, I'm an audience member. What do other audience... It's like you're looking it up on Yelp. Mm-hmm. Google Maps, you're looking at a place just to see how many stars it has. Do people like the restaurant?
Yeah.
How many people go to look up a restaurant and look up what the recent Michelin star chef critic said about the restaurant? Or do you go onto Google and you look up how many stars does it have from audience?
I think it's, again, a member of extremes. For general audience, it actually is valuable to know, like, what do a large swath of people think about this?
Yeah.
I also think it's very valuable to know what an individual that you trust and respect think about. That's the whole point of YouTube reviews and different movie and book review channels is like, hey, I generally like this person's opinions. Their opinions kind of line up with mine. And so I value that person's opinion versus do you really value an average of critics' opinions? I don't think so. Like, it doesn't work the same. Like a...
Yeah.
So
ooh, I like this. I like this point. Yeah, yeah.
The average of the masses, valuable. The average of the critics, not really valuable, but individual critics can be worthwhile to you if you care about it.
Cheated the YouTube system. We have two reviewers here. So chances are they're more likely to agree with one of us.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's plenty of people out there that are going like, hey, Richard disliked the book, Austin liked the book. I'll probably like it. It's going to be good. And vice versa. And so some people listen and go like, they're listening for your opinions, and some people are listening for my opinions.
Do you think anybody, if anybody out there is like this, please let us know. Because do you think there's somebody that listens to both of us and goes, takes the middle and goes, okay, one liked it, one hated it. It's probably in the middle.
I wonder.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know.
Either that, or do they listen and go like, oh man, Richard hated the book. That means I'll probably love it.
It's more likely true if one of us hates it than, oh, okay, inverse.
Yeah. Oh no, that's plenty of times happened. But no, for myself, I really like listening to, for books, Mike's book reviews for me. And
Matt's
fantasy reviews.
Bookborn?
I like Bookborn for different reasons. I like her research. I love her thoughts on different tropes, and gets me really thoughtful. I don't know if I agree with her opinions on books and whether or not I should pick that book up.
Okay.
But we all have our different, each reviewer scratches a different itch. I just seem to line up with Matt's fantasy reviews and Mike's book reviews.
Gotcha.
That's how I've kind of seen it. Movies is, I mean, I used to follow Chris Stuckman more and Mr. Sunday movies.
Yeah.
So I'd watch their stuff on
YouTube,
for movies and whether or not I'll like it or not.
Yeah. I think we went out and watched movies like Godzilla Minus One because we saw people were raving about it on YouTube. Just people that we liked. And we went, oh.
Yeah. I think.
Let's check it out.
I'm trying to remember who we watched that.
That's why we watched everything ever all at once as well. There's a lot of films that we just saw somebody was reviewing it and went, it's probably worth a shot.
Yeah.
It's a little gateway. So that's a great point where a specific reviewer's opinion matters more than the aggregate versus the audience. The aggregate matters more than the specific, unless obviously it's someone you know.
Yeah.
It's someone that just saw the movie and said, hey, bud, go watch it. But I like that a lot. And I kind of wanted to test you a little quiz here to see if you are the critic or the entertainer, if you fit into this category.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I have a quick test here, and I'm just going to give you the first paragraph of Hyperion.
Okay?
And tell me what this is going for. Is it entertainment or art? It's going to be a blurred line. Audience at home, play along if you want. It's going to be really tough, okay? This is the first paragraph of Hyperion.
Mm-hmm.
The hegemony consul sat on the balcony of his ebony spaceship and played Rachmaninoff's prelude in C-sharp minor on an ancient but well-maintained Steinway while great, green, saurian things surged and bellowed in the swamps below. A thunderstorm was brewing to the north. Bruised black clouds silhouetted a forest of giant gymnosperms, while stratocumulus towered 9 kilometers high in a violent sky. Lightning rippled along the horizon. Closer to the ship, occasional vague reptilian shapes would blunder into the interdiction field, cry out, and then crash away through indigo mists. The console concentrated on a difficult section of the prelude and ignored the approach of the storm and nightfall. Now, would you like to tell the audience how that's your favorite book ever? One of them?
It is my favorite. It's one of my favorite books. I love that book. It's so good.
I think that paragraph should be on your tombstone.
Yeah, probably. Just it's like, very pretentious.
I know. I would put that there. Say nothing about your life. You put that and I understand you. I'm like, ah, that's who he was.
Yeah, that's me.
And then I have another paragraph to tell
you. Okay, go ahead.
This is from a book you might know.
Maybe.
50 Shades of Grey.
Ah,
this
yes.
is the first line. I scowl with frustration at myself in the mirror.
Yeah. This slop line. Now, see, we got to be fair. Are you going to give me the whole paragraph?
No. But it's I guess trying to define the conversation between some things aren't going for art. Someone could listen at home
okay.
about that Hyperion first paragraph mm-hmm. and just go, Rich, you like that? Like, take aside the whole book and what yeah. it is. Someone can have that knee-jerk reaction of, that's not for me. That's a lot.
Yeah, but also 50 Shades of Grey, that first line is particularly just bad.
Yeah, it's a bad first line.
It's a bad first line because it's twice as long as it needs to be.
Yeah.
Basically, it doubles the words. Yeah. Scowl at yourself in the mirror. Pick one. Just do it. Say it once. Don't say it three times in the same sentence.
I was going for the contrast, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
The contrast between Hyperion and 50 Shades. So I think, though, that whole point between those two things, though, mm-hmm. is your books, even your romances, your generic romance, your generic action,
yeah.
whether it's a film or a book, are going very much for pure entertainment value a lot of the times. And how do you sit there and judge both the same? Can they be judged equally? Do you
equally? I'm not sure. I mean, you do get a feeling sometimes of, okay, I don't know if anyone else is the same, and maybe you kind of answer down below if anyone thinks the same way as me. When I start watching a movie or even reading a book, I try going into it with an open mind. It's like seeing, hey, what is the movie trying to do? What is the book trying to do?
Yeah.
If early on I catch on that it's just for entertainment value, I do my best to just shut my brain off
yeah.
and go into kind of veg state and just let the movie wash over and let the book just kind of like go at me. Like, whatever. I'm not going to think. I'm not going to put 1 ounce of thought into this.
You have that.
And then I yeah. judge my reaction and like, hey, how do I feel after that? Versus, hey, I think this book's trying to say something. I start thinking about the lines even afterwards. Is that the same for you? Do you sometimes can just turn your brain off for things?
Yeah.
Because, like, that's what I did with, Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Yeah.
I didn't think 1 ounce. I just gave no thoughts about it. I was like, okay, this is just some fun stuff.
Oh, we're here.
I'm here for let the book just enter my brain.
Yeah.
And have its way, and I do nothing. I'm just going to lay there like a dead fish. While the book just has its way with me. that's my analogy for
okay.
that.
Then would you agree or disagree? I have the quotes from Martin Scorsese here. He famously or infamously, whichever side you're on,
mm-hmm.
went and trashed Marvel films for yeah. saying that they're not real cinema. Before I give his explanation, what do you think about him just saying, because we're talking about this whole thing of critics of art versus entertainment, and Scorsese is saying it's not real cinema.
As an art form, I understand his point, especially just as a technical film of, hey, how are you doing your shot compositions? Are you actually using interesting techniques? Or are you telling a story with the camera and using the camera as a medium to get across something more interesting and more depth to your idea than if you were just to tell them what happened.
Because he seems to be defining cinema as an art form.
Well, yeah.
Something that is skillful. Something that is...
The art of cinema is using the camera in a way to show something that words and a still picture can't tell. Basically.
So you would say Marvel films are not real cinema?
Sure. Because you look at dialogue scenes of its shot, cut shot, 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 shot. There's no actual... They don't do anything of showing a different lens or a different position to actually get across with how the character's feeling or how the character should be in that moment of even the simple stuff of you have the camera below the actor to kind of show how above it they feel. You go top down to kind of show the maybe anxiety and fear. There's some different techniques. Close-up shot to normally show anxiety, wide back to show, you know, separation from
the
In the
Lord of the Rings, use forced perspective to have
yeah.
Frodo look small, Gandalf and Mikon look big.
Yeah, the technical ass.
Yeah.
Versus Marvel, just kind of camera on stage, they talk, big thing happens in the background. It's not really using the camera to tell a story.
So it would,
it's just showing you cool stuff.
So I'm going to read off what Scorsese said and why he's saying this, but it seems like the whole case here of the entertainment versus art people is whichever camp you're in, or let's say you're just someone that looks for entertainment, or you're someone that does look for just thought-provokingness and looks down on entertainment, whichever side of it you're on, the best thing to do is when Martin Scorsese says something like that, it's not real cinema.
Yeah.
The reaction to that is go like, okay, either agree or disagree, but understand why he's saying it. That's more important of getting down to why even you just saying it's not real cinema. You're agreeing with his definition of cinema, it looks like.
Yeah.
Put this in your mouth, for example, if he was to say Marvel films aren't real movies.
Probably disagree on just definition of a movie is,
right,
I think, looser than cinema. I'm putting words in his mouth, basically. But if I put words in his mouth, I agree with
him. So these are his actual words, okay?
Yeah.
He said, Martin Scorsese says, I don't think Marvel movies are cinema. I said that I've tried to watch a few of them and that they're not for me, that they seem to me to be closer to theme parks than they are to movies as I've known and loved them throughout my life. And in the end, I don't think they're cinema. The fact that and I'm skipping around paragraphs to what he said here. Mm-mm. The fact that films themselves don't interest me is a matter of personal taste and temperament. I know that if I were younger, if I've come of age at a later time, I might have been excited by these pictures and maybe even wanted to make one myself. But I grew up when I did, and I developed a sense of movies of what they were and what they could be that was far from the Marvel universe as we on Earth are from Alpha Centauri. Cinema was about revelation, aesthetic, emotional and spiritual revelation. It was about characters, the complexity of people and their contradictory and sometimes paradoxical natures, the way they can hurt one another and love one another and suddenly come face to face with themselves. Him defining cinema in a more deep way. So,
then I would add a caveat there.
Oh, add your caveat.
I think there are very entertaining films which don't go into those aspects.
Mm.
However, does enough that I would consider it cinema. Mainly, they actually use the camera to show a different perspective, and they do a bit more skillfully. Do you get what I mean? I think Mad Max Fury Road would be cinema, but it's not. It doesn't go over any of those kind of ideas that Martin Scorsese is talking about.
Oh, okay.
However, it uses the camera expertly.
Yeah.
It actually tells a story with its camera composition. That's the difference of, like, it's going above and beyond to, I guess it's the skill. Skill of the director, skill of the camera.
Right. And then when we're looking at books, because we're book-centric. Movies are easier to give an example.
Yeah, it's a little easier to say it.
Books and the technical aspect, that critical aspect, is how is the prose and the technique and how skillful were your words constructed and the themes and how was it tied together? Kind of, because you can't obviously have a camera to visually put yourself in. So a book is much more your syntax, your use of words, your efficiency, whatever measure you want to use to be more artful about it. And also on top of that, the reflection, your books that you reflect on, that when we're, if we're using that as a quick definition, reflecting on art and reflecting on a book that sticks the test of time, where you're going to remember your 1984 is a reflective book because it represents this dystopian society and Big Brother. It was, that theme was really present. I don't think people talk about his prose a ton, but in the art form, that it had that theme that stuck and it was made at the right time. And now we look back at that as a prime example, or anything more in the modern sense that will stand the test of time. We look back at Lord of the Rings that started this whole new thing. Dune is very reflective and more artful.
Though you look at something that will stand the test of time, Harry Potter. Harry Potter will last for, and it's going to be there for all of history.
Yeah.
It's going to last a long time.
And that's just fun.
It's just fun.
It's just wizards.
Some part of it, Harry Potter does get to kind of root truths of the hero's journey and story. It's the coming of age story is very much base true. It does say something. It says something that has been done other times, but it's done very well there.
Yeah, I would go as far to say this.
Mm-hmm.
The original Star Wars.
Sure.
I don't think they're super thought-provoking.
No, they're not.
I think it's just Star Trek as well. But let me take that back. I was thinking the movies.
Correct.
Yeah. The show, different.
Next Generation is peak.
I saw television. My life flash before my eyes.
Television.
You said, oh, wait a second.
No.
Hold up, boy. Give you one of these. So Star Wars is going to stand the test of time, and it was original. That just brought up this hay fever of love for, oh, look what this did, and that's fun, and lightsabers, cool, entertaining. But that can stand the test of time. So you're entertaining stuff and thought-provoking stuff, although maybe still using the word Star Wars, again, not a negative connotation, is more distracting in the sense I don't think back to the original Star Wars and go, oh, look at this theme and message, like, sure, good versus evil. Like, take away the fact that it is saying something. But in general, I look back and think, like, Star Wars, the Force.
Yeah.
I think the Force. I think lightsabers. I think
Darth Vader. Big reason why it especially stands the test of time is high on entertainment value, but it is incredibly competent at the message of what it means to, you know, stand up for yourself, to defy the odds, courage, a bunch of, like, the basic hero's journey stuff. That is a good message to kind of tell people, and it's really quick and efficient at doing that. It's just well done, but it's not really doing anything special, unique, any kind of twist on that, but it does tell the hero's journey well, while also being very entertaining.
Do you think that it did something new?
With the story? No, not particularly with its story. But I will say the new aspect of it is before this with most sci-fi movies and television was seen as far more schlop entertainment than something to take seriously, where most sci-fi was your Flash Gordon is not really to be taken seriously. It's a very enjoyable. I love Flash Gordon. It's fun, but you don't take it seriously.
Yeah. Wait, is that the right thing? Flash.
Oh, Flash. Oh, savior of the universe.
I didn't know the lyrics. Great. I just mumbled them.
It's great. Yeah. Great song. Star Wars actually demands that you take it seriously. It actually has a story, characters you're supposed to care about. Mm-hmm. It has dialogue that is not supposed to really be laughed at completely. That, I think, is the new thing. And people did not really take sci-fi seriously until then.
Sure.
Like, even original trilogy Star Trek, I think there's some good stuff in there. Like, there are some great episodes that have something interesting to say. But a lot of the episodes are just your.
You would say classic. Star Wars had a little bit of new stuff, but generally wasn't anything super revolutionary. The revolutionary is the wrong word. It's more so
original. The original series does have some revolutionary ideas with, like, especially race and the main thing of Lieutenant Uhura being.
Oh, I'm talking about Star Wars. Not Star Trek.
Yeah, sure.
I'm talking about the, I'm saying the word revolutionaries. It did something new with, I don't think people have seen something like that on screen before. Obviously, you had films like 2001 A Space Odyssey.
It did something new for sci-fi.
Yeah. And I'm trying to distinguish here, how important is it? We learned this little lesson in a book I won't spoil, mm-hmm. but we know what book it is. But this little lesson about how much do we value the new?
How much
do we value something that is new and fresh? Do the critics value something that's new and fresh more so than the audience does? Or do both value that? Because if you're just going for entertainment, well, entertainment can happen in all sorts of new forms. If you're going for reflection, well, there has to be something interesting and quote-unquote new that pushes it forward. So do we look at, okay, Ferris Bueller Day Off in the 80s, a bunch of cool coming-of-age stories, and not anything new, but still kick-ass and fun and awesome. And Sing Street came out 2016, kick-ass and fun and awesome, and it's not doing much different than Ferris Bueller other than having kick-ass songs. Drive it like you stole it.
New songs, and also the main characters looked like actual normal people and not movie stars.
If you got one thing out of
most of the they look they took them off the street instead of like trying to make you think Zac Efron is just your average high school boy.
Troy Bolton.
No.
I just want to say, if anybody got one thing out of this entire episode, go watch Sing Street.
Yeah. Fantastic
movie. Amazing. And the
got
the,
snubbed the
brother
Oscars,
the brother in that movie is genuinely a fantastic character. Unironically,
a really good
amazing.
Character with spectacular scene.
Yeah.
It came down to that one scene for him.
A couple. There were two for me.
Spoil.
No, there are two. There are two, but I know the one you're thinking of.
I think I know the second
go
one.
Go watch
you're
Sing Street.
About,
yes. Come back. Actually, come back. Join our Patreon where you can talk to us about the film. Check our link in the description below. We have a book club every month.
I'm bad. I was bad this time on actually plugging our shit.
Watch Sing Street is the more important part. If you decide between paying us or Sing Street, go buy Sing Street.
Yes.
Sing Street is awesome and kick ass.
Really
and,
worth your money.
Yeah. And the whole point about that and Ferris Bueller and all these films that aren't saying anything super new. Like, I don't look at Sing Street and go, revolutionary.
Yeah.
But when there's some sort of message being said, when something stands the test of time in a reflective way rather than the distracting entertainment way, do critics in general value that entertainment needs to... Sorry. Do critics value art as in it needs to say something a little new?
I think so.
Because you see the whole art debate?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole art debate is about how modern art exists because... this modern thinking that, it's doing something that's never been done before. So that can kind of be the hubris of
modern
critics.
Values the new over the skillful, I think.
And valuing the new over the skillful, as you could see, it's just, that's...
It's not entirely like, it's devolved of all skill. That's not what I'm saying. Like, there actually are modern artists, like, clearly took a lot of work to do. However, it's just... I don't think it's the priority of most modern art.
Got it. You're looking for something that's never been done before.
Yeah. It, new and unique is basically it. So if it's a unique medium and style of painting, that's valuable, even though the style is shit.
That's part of it where the audience, the ones going for entertainment, I'm conflating the two right now, but the ones going for entertainment kind of have one agreement. Was it fun and enjoyable? Maybe fun's the wrong word. Was it enjoyable?
Yeah.
Is the criticism the audience would look at? Is it worth time? There's one measure for the audience. There's one measure for entertainment. Was it worth the entertainment time? Did it distract me?
Mm-hmm.
And as if for the art, where it gets all muddied is you're looking at thousands, if not infinite factors to what you're actually looking for in art. Whereas the modern artists are looking for, was it new? Or some people are looking at, was it skillful? And Martin Scorsese might say, was it skillful in making the complexity of people and their contradictory and sometimes paradoxical natures? That's something that he just said.
Yeah.
Of that's what he's looking for in film. And if he doesn't have characters with the complexity and people and contradictory and sometimes paradoxical natures, he's going to say Marvel isn't cinema. Because that's how he looks at cinema, art. Whereas all these other people that are critiquing something, like looking at a book or its prose or looking at a film and its cinematography.
Well, ultimately, there's infinite ways to, if you are taking that type of care into your characters and show, like the complexity of the human experience.
Yeah.
Except yours
and ours. Ours are pretty simple. But
yeah, it's pretty simple. Yeah. But there's infinite ways to tell that story. Like, that's as many stars in the sky as there are, you know, unique human experiences to explore and how different people interact. It's infinite. So, like, there's a bunch of stories to be told there, and that's why I think he values it, because almost every single one of them can be unique.
Yeah.
Versus, there's so many ways to, like, show an explosion. At the end of the day, like, that was a really big explosion. Like,
that was a bigger explosion.
That was a bigger explosion. There's only so many ways to show that, I think.
Yeah.
So entertainment kind of has that. There's a stopgap of, you've seen it once, you've seen it a bunch of times. Occasionally you may see something a little new, but not often.
The reason you complimented me earlier, which I don't know if that was real or not.
It was real.
Okay, thank you. So
you have changed my way of thinking about that. You put the right words that I could not find myself.
I was just going to give you a compliment as well, just to tie this all together and say, before this episode started, I didn't know where this was going to go, and I think genuinely learned something from you and learned something throughout this conversation.
That's nice.
This was actually very productive and helpful.
This was a very wholesome episode.
Wow.
To ramble.
Huh.
Don't expect many more of these.
We'll see you next week. It's going to be a way worse episode, but we'll see you then.
Bye, y'all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.